Welcome to the Speak Like a Leader podcast with John Bates.
Welcome to the show. With me today, I have someone that I had the great pleasure of meeting. This is one of those silver linings from the pandemic. I got to meet our guest today because, you know, roundabout ways because of COVID-19. And he is just someone that I think you're going to love. He's just one of those people who is a global citizen out there making a difference, and he really brings it. So today I'm super excited to introduce you to Dr. Suresh Devnani. He's an award-winning speaker. He's an internationally recognized global expert in leadership and workplace culture. And for more than 28 years, he's been teaching entrepreneurs, educators, corporate leaders, professionals, and overachievers how to build innovative, thriving organizations and design the dynamic life they desire. And his name out there in the world is Dr. Happy. So welcome, Dr. Happy. It's great to see you, Suresh. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, John, for inviting me today.
You're super welcome. So now, if you want to find Dr. Suresh, Dr. Happy, you can go to Suresh Devnani, SureshDevnani.com. And once you go to SureshDevnani.com, if you scroll all the way down and look in the bottom right of his website, you can find him on a bunch of social media because he's got a bunch of great YouTube videos. At his website, he's got a lot of great content that you can get. And so I highly recommend that you go to SureshDevnani.com and check him out. And that's how you find him. So Suresh, you are not in the United States right now. Can we start out by talking about where you are?
I'm currently based out of Cairo, Egypt, so the city of pyramids.
Wow. I mean, you're not far from the pyramids, right? Can you see them from your window or something?
Not from my window, but they're only 30 minutes drive from my home. So they are very near.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. So Suresh, you know, on the show, we talk about leadership and communication. And, you know, you have had a lot of experience with corporate culture. And I think that leadership and communication is a key part of building a really strong culture. And I think culture eats strategy for lunch all day long. So, you know, in your nearly 30 years of doing this, what are a couple things that you think are useful to share with entrepreneurs and leaders and the human beings that are listening to Speak Like a Leader show right now? Like what comes to mind? What's one of the big things for you?
I believe for a corporate culture in today's world, it needs open communications. No longer can a leader make all judgment for everyone. When we even allow a voice from the most junior staff of a company to speak up, because sometimes the greatest ideas come from the guy who's down there, not always on the top. So it's always open. Maybe not have weekly meetings, but at least have monthly forums where everyone from the company is allowed to speak and, you know, talk about whatever problems they might be facing or maybe the great ideas they want to share. And great ideas, as I said earlier, they come from sometimes the bottom. So open communication is crucial in today's world because we have all these different age groups working in most larger NMCs, but even startups are hiring people from all age groups. No longer you would see only people who are 20. I've seen startups with 50-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 20-year-olds. So the whole idea is when you have that kind of diversity, you have to include everybody in all decisions. That's how you will get a team that works in a super synergy form where every decision is made in such a way that everybody has the same goals.
Well, you know, I very, very much agree with you. And it brings up for me some of the, you know, some of the blockages to that, right? And you are, you know, you, I do a lot of global work, but you do even more global work than I do. So you're seeing all kinds of different cultures And you're, you know, you're in Cairo, you're doing a lot of work in the Middle East, and I think in India and all kinds of places like that. What do you notice culturally as you go from country to country? Not, I mean, not to call any particular culture out in a bad way, but to just say, hey, you know, I mean, because I think that you know, in America, maybe to our detriment, we don't have such respect for the elders, let's say, you know, like just because, you know, I think in other cultures that I've experienced, there's just a lot more deference. If someone's older than you, there's just automatic deference. And I could see that there are upsides to that, but I could also see that there could be some downsides to that. What do you think about that, Suresh?
With that age group differences, it just reminds me of the movie that called The Intern, whereas they bring somebody older to do a secretarial job, which was generally for a younger personality. But yet mm-hmm. he outperforms and he becomes the mentor of the owner of the company. So I don't think age matters in this world. Yeah, because experience definitely is important in any field. Even let's say for a startup, fine, this is new technology, but sometimes bringing the old wisdom into an enterprise can actually grow the company to the next level.
Yeah.
So it's always good to bring in specialists who might be older than your age group to get advice. I'm not saying all advice that comes from an older person is always better, but always listen and then decide, you know, make your judgment then, but don't make a judgment before you have even allowed them to speak. And what I have been realizing in the Middle East, see, most companies in the Middle East have a very diverse workforce. So not only age-wise, but also racial group-wise. So they are hiring people from all countries around the world. So I work with a lot of UAE companies out of Dubai and Abu Dhabi. You will see people coming in from Africa, from Asia, from the US, Canada, South America. So that's how, and that kind of diversity actually involves a lot of open communication, because every personality has its own pros and cons, and how do you protect each one's views becomes a larger problem for most of the HR. And how do you actually maximize benefit from these different variations of people, the personalities? It's a big challenge, but also could become an advantage for some companies because they have this diverse workforce. So any idea can go through all different levels of thinking before they actually become reality.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds to me like if an organization can manage for that and have, you know, that could be either a big stumbling block or that could be just a super massive advantage. Because I think that, you know, in today's global world, having those perspectives and if people were to listen to you and have every voice be heard and at least considered, right? And then, of course, make a great choice. Not every idea is going to be the best one. But I think I've been reading study after study that shows that the more diverse the team making the decision is, the better those decisions tend to be for the long run. So that's very, very interesting. What other things are you seeing that you know, anything else interesting that you're seeing in the Middle East, like as the world stumbles through yet another wave of COVID and things like that?
The biggest challenge right now is people have a problem dealing with being retained for their workers. Because what has happened is a lot of people are afraid they might lose their jobs because COVID has brought uncertainty into the employment world. The people are afraid they might lose a job. So they are very, very concerned. And this is a trust issue that the companies have to keep explaining to the staff that we will try every effort to retain as many of you, even if we go through even more challenging times than currently. And as you can see in the US right now, a lot of companies are having a hard time rehiring people because people don't want to go back to work. They are afraid that they come to work for another 3-4 months, 6 months, and then again, they might get laid off because there's a new variant or there's a new lockdown.
Yeah.
So today's people have choices because they have got so comfortable working from home. So it's harder for companies that need actual bodies working in. So like, let's say airline industry or the restaurant industry or like even Amazon, they need physical bodies there to pack the packages. Yeah. I know there is a lot of IT going on in the background, but still it needs bodies to help the business work. And that is what is becoming hard. And that's where the inflation will come. For companies that they actually have to pay more money than they had before before they laid out the people, because that's how only you can retain talent, because by bribing them, coming in and getting them in.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting. So what are some of the things that you think about? Because I'm going to be speaking about leading through change pretty soon for the Government Performance Institute here in the States. And I've been thinking pretty hard about, what are some best practices when it comes to communicating with employees in times like this? And, happy to share some of the things I've come up with, but I wonder what what are you telling people that you're working with now? And
again, like earlier, we spoke about open communications. Let your employees talk, explain their problems to, and have an empathetic ear there. Understand their problems. Yeah. If you help them solve their problems, these are your lifelong employees who will stay loyal throughout your enterprise growth. And you need people like that, because at the end of the day, if we do not retain the best, we are not going to make it through this COVID pandemic. We need talent who are willing to work 100%, actually even 110% of their ability, because at the end of the day, these are the people that make a company great or break. So I believe in the great. So make sure, listen, take care of their needs. I know it might be hard on the balance sheet, but make sure, take care of the needs, in the sense some of these people are not only looking for money, but they are just looking for somebody to take care of their well-being. And as you have already seen a lot, the mental well-being is a big thing right out there. We have to find a way to create a good work-life balance, even in the virtual world. Many people think by just working from home, people are actually better off. Many people would prefer to go back to work. So you have to find avenues where you can create a balance, where maybe out of a 5-day work week, we still have 2 days of interaction physically and 3 days of working from home or virtually wherever possible. Yeah. But we need to create some kind of balance so at least people stay sane. Not everybody enjoys being at home with their family or the kids or whatever, because we need some time away. And so we could actually reflect better for ourselves.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing that I've been seeing a lot is just how, inhumane we're being to ourselves, because we can schedule back-to-back Zoom calls for 14 hours a day. Just because we can doesn't mean we should.
So like what you were saying with the back-to-back, my suggestion for everyone out there is try to keep, after every half an hour, at least a 5-minute break of a Zoom, because there's only so much of a mind can absorb. There's no point of just going to a lot of Zooms and being mute or not being there. Because at the end of the day, if you're not participating, better just not participate. Why overload with overwhelm, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So maintain your well-being yourself, because at the end of the day, companies can only do so much. As an individual, we have to take care of our own self.
Yeah. Well, and I think I've heard a number of people at large organizations that I maybe didn't expect to do this. A lot of teams have said, okay, we're no meetings on Friday. We don't do any Zoom meetings on Friday. If you really have to talk, call someone. Phone calls have become much more popular again because everybody's like, video is so stressful. I think that as an organization, you could implement some suggested rules like that. And as a human being managing your own schedule, I think that's a really, really good point.
So some companies have tried like social happy hours at the end of the day, just to keep it going as regular as possible, because it was common, like for most people, to work till about 5:30 and then go down to the bar, have a drink together, let the steam off. Yeah. So some of these companies have done that. That's a great idea. Or some companies, I have suggested them to actually have morning exercises where they work on laughter yoga, or they work on a meditation or some kind of reflection before they even start their first Zoom meeting. So at least we have let go of whatever stresses that have been built up from yesterday.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So let's talk about happiness, Dr. Happy. What are some of the things over your 30 years of doing this that you see on a regular basis? Because I know from my perspective, I work with people all over the world, and the biggest lesson that I think I've learned is not how different we are. Yes, we have these wonderful, amazing, exquisite differences, but fundamentally we're the same, I think, you know? So I think that all those experiences that you've had all over the world, what are some of the big life lessons that you could share with us?
Biggest life lesson I have learned for myself. Let me share that first before I share what others have told me. The biggest life lesson I've learned is money can't buy me happiness. But yes, money can buy me comfort. I'm not saying money is evil or wrong here, but don't only run behind money. Sometimes look at something bigger than that. So fine, get yourself comfortable, cover your needs, fulfill all whatever you desire, but look beyond that needs, because needs are only needs that will never make you happy. And as you were saying earlier, we are all alike. So whatever I've heard from even billionaires, very, very affluent movie stars, politicians, one thing, take all this away from me, but show me pure joy. Show me pure peace. Show me fulfillment. Yeah. And that's all they seek. And so these are from very, very affluent people who are willing to give away everything, but yet they want to know the secret of finding joy. So most of us actually, at the end of the day, will seek joy. Joy is something even stronger, more powerful than happiness, because happiness somehow has been overused, overstretched already. So what is joy? Joy is completeness. Like, you feel one with the universe. Like how you're saying, we are so close to each other that we can actually support one another to be happier. And that's how happiness can be earned. When you help somebody else and seeing that smile reflecting back on you, you will be that much more happier. I assure you that. You cannot make somebody happy just by giving them money. So I'm not the biggest fan of giving money to the poor people on the road or that. It's better buy them a meal, talk to them, listen to their problem. What are they dealing with? That will be actually more helpful to them, more uplifting to them, at the same time uplifting to you, because you will see how much more blessed you are as an individual. Because at the end of the day, gratitude is the key ingredient of us being happier.
Well, now, is it okay if I mention that you had a brush with death here a little while ago?
Please go ahead. I'm more than comfortable to share about that.
Because, you know, we were meeting in our global leadership synchronization calls throughout the depths of COVID. And I remember you moved to Cairo in the midst of all that, which was pretty brave. And then you had a run-in. Yeah. Do you want to tell us about that? And maybe tell us a little about the experience, because that was definitely a scary experience. And then, you know, maybe what your takeaways are.
So what happened, somehow, even after being very careful, I still acquired COVID through, I don't know where, how I actually acquired it. But I did not take it so seriously. So from a basic bronchitis, it became pneumonia. And from pneumonia, finally, I was unable to breathe. So I needed to be on a ventilator, but my oxygen levels fell below 80%, which is the telltale sign. And it took my wife and me 4 days to actually find a decent hospital in Cairo to admit it. Because what happened is there were just so many patients out there, all seeking a bed. And I did not want to be hospitalized in the wrong place, because, medical care is crucial. If you have the right medical care, if you went to the wrong hospital, guess what? They will send you to heaven earlier, I say. But anyway, so it took 7 days of steroids and all different kinds of toxic medication to bring me back. And while I was taking steroids, I was unable to sleep. So I just kept seeing blinking lights throughout the night and the day when I was medicated. So it just allowed me to think how grateful I am that I'm blessed with this body, this mind, this soul. So why only should I be focused on myself when I can be focused on other people? So this is kind of a awakening moment for me. And this was actually a second time this has happened to me. So I would tell everyone, be careful out there. COVID is a serious illness. Get vaccinated wherever possible, because there are so many people around the world that have no chance of getting vaccinated yet. But to most of our audience out there, I'm sure there are opportunities for you to get vaccinated, and get vaccinated. I know there might be side effects in the long run, but at least protect yourself now in the sense that at least you can avoid getting hospitalized. Being in a hospital is no fun. And what happens is while you have COVID, there's high chances of your family members getting it from you. And that's what happened. My wife got it from me. My son got it from me. My daughter got it from me. My helper got it from me. I even had two cats who got COVID from me. So this is a very contagious disease. And right now with the Delta variant, it is even times 10 more contagious. So take every precaution and get vaccinated if you have not. I sincerely hope that you get vaccinated sooner, but no later.
Yeah. You know, I just read a really great book that reminds me of you, and I think you might like it if you haven't read it. It's called The Untethered Soul. And in one of the final chapters of that book, he says, you know, people now really avoid talking about death, right? They just avoid the conversation. We don't see dead people. We try to stay as far away from that as we can. And he said, you know, that's a big mistake because death is the greatest teacher of all, right? Death is what makes life so precious and so important. And he said, you should think about death every day. You should talk about death every day and use death to help you live and be present in life. And I think that's some great advice. And you know, it makes me a little get a little emotional about it though, because I just, you know, it's really, really true. Like this is performance art, you know, like there's an expiration date on every single one of us. And it was really terrifying to have you come so close in that experience. And I think that, you know, laying there when you couldn't sleep because of all the steroids and just watching those blinking lights and being grateful to even be alive was a pretty good use of your time. You know,
it's a great time to reflect. And as you said, death is something we should all recognize and appreciate, because at the end of the day, we are only so much this body. Yes, so much more, the mind, the soul. Now, I can't force this idea on everybody, but as most leaders who are what we call on the phase of self-realization on the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, they have come to reflect on this too, because we all need to get on that bandwagon of being a servant leader, a leader who's not there to serve himself, but to serve all the people that he is looking after. Because every leader should actually serve his team so they could also become better future leaders. We are not there to do anything for ourselves because we have already reached our threshold. So the whole idea here is how can we make the world better by making better leaders? And the best leader out there is one who listens, you know, and speaks very little, because great wisdom can be said in one word. You don't need to say it in 50 words and try to prove a point, because at the end of the way, I heard one thing: ego is not your friend. But ego can be managed so it can give you the energy to go further. That's all it should be used for. Don't use your ego to prove yourself better. No one's as good as anybody. We all have these great ideas, but sometimes luck plays a part too. I've seen so many people with the greatest wisdom, but yet there was a missing ingredient in their life, which was luck. And luck comes when we don't see only for ourselves, but we see for others. Somebody asks me, can you see your future? I say, no, I can see other people's future because I can help them reach to that threshold that they are seeking.
Yeah. Yeah. You remind me of that saying that I think is a great coach's saying or a mentor's saying or a friend saying, which is it's hard to see the picture when you're in the frame. And even for you or me, it's hard. Like I can't coach myself as well as I can coach someone else because I'm outside of their frame, but I'm always in my frame.
And you know, one thing about criticism, you know, like so many people think, hey, it's a bad idea people criticize you. Take every criticism as a constructive criticism. You know better what you are doing wrong, but sometimes even a very young person can give you very good advice. So don't underestimate the young person's advice. I get great advice from my children. Because they hear me, they listen to me. And sometimes, you know, if I feel I am only older, I am wiser, then you'll never do the best. So always listen out. You know, there's no bad criticism out there. It's how you use that to uplift your own skills, you will succeed at.
Yeah. You know, I do love what Marshall Goldsmith says. He doesn't call it feedback. You know, it's not criticism or feedback. He calls it feed forward because it helps you move forward and become better. So it sounds to me like servant leadership is a key ingredient to happiness as a leader. It sounds like listening is a key ingredient to happiness as a leader. And I have this feeling that happiness, in the sense that we're talking about, leads to better success and better bottom line and everything. What are some other tips you have for leaders in terms of happiness and maybe some of these things that, you know, maybe aren't as obvious? You know, it's not, it's, I will admit, it's, it, I think the picture people have of a leader is not that they're always sitting there listening. It's that they're standing up saying something brilliant, you know, but the only way they can finally stand up and say something brilliant is through listening. And
what I have realized, and I've always told leaders, it's okay to be unperfect. You know, perfection doesn't exist. And fix your problems at home before you fix your problems at work. Because our problems at work are easier to handle. But when we have problems at home, like with children or with our spouses, that can always drain our energy. So we can't be that creative. We can't be innovative at work when we have problems that are coming along. And, you know, a lot of people think by just cutting off their family, they are letting go of their problems. No, you can never cut off your family. Your family will always haunt you until you deal with the problems.
Yeah.
You know, because our family is a reflection of us. So you can't say my family is who they are because they are. They are generally a reflection, because as your children are growing older, they are a reflection of you and your spouse. So how can you blame the world for the problem? So fix matters at home. So I actually help leaders work on their home issues first before I even talk about work. I tell them what is bothering you at home first. And that's my approach always. And that's what makes them even more successful. Because at the end of the day, for a leader to be happy, he needs a happy life before he works happy at work. And so that's what's important with the leaders too. Fix yourself before you try to fix the world. So before you try to fix your people at work, if you have problems, find somebody for guidance who can help you with your affairs, and then come back and spread that happiness to your employees. Because what your employees might be going through is similar to your problems. They are also seeking perfection because they see a leader who's believing in perfection. Sometimes imperfection is better, because at least then we have the channel of speaking to each other and trying to help one another. Because perfection stops that from happening.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't agree more. My motto this year, Suresh, is imperfect action. That's my motto. Because I realized, like you said, there is no like perfection is reserved for the great spirit. Like there's nothing perfect that I'm ever going to do. So why would I wait till I get it perfect? You know, that's just going to be me waiting forever. And the other thing that I just really love, and this is a thing that for me turned out to be a little bit counterintuitive. I don't know why, but when I was younger, I definitely drew this line mentally between work and life and my private home life and my work life and kind of fell into that thing of like, well, you know, don't talk about personal stuff at work, right? Like, okay, what are you talking about? Like, are you kidding me? There's a difference? No, there's no difference. And personal stuff, work stuff, home stuff, life stuff. I mean, if you're out of integrity in your home life, then you're out of integrity. Period. You know, like you can't be out of integrity in your home life and in integrity at work. Like it just doesn't happen. And, you know, in all of my contracts, I say, you know, I'm out to make a lasting difference for you in your entire life. So my assumption is that everything is on the table and we're playing full out in this entire engagement. And that means everything. That doesn't mean everything in the boundary of the work life, right? Because there's no real distinction. That's a false distinction. But I will say it took me a while to realize that. But all of the great coaches and all of the great leaders that I've gotten a chance to talk to about this at all, I mean, it's just, of course, you know, it's one thing. So I think that's really, really good. And you know, if you're listening and you've got that distinction in your brain between work and life, I would encourage you to start melting that distinction and noticing how, you know, much it is all one thing. And you know, I don't know if you've noticed this, Suresh, I'm sure you have, but it does also seem like because it's all so connected, when you tug on this corner that maybe doesn't seem related to anything, but you heal that, or you handle that, all of a sudden all these things pop up, all these other unexpected places that, and it makes a huge difference. And it seemed like it really wasn't attached to anything, but it's all attached. Yeah,
exactly. You know, like a lot of leaders come to me, I've lost my mojo. I say, what brought that mojo in the first place? Oh, I had gotten married. Oh, I've got the first child. I said, then what has happened? Where have you lost the mojo? I fight with my wife. I'm having challenges. I'm drinking. I said, then very easy. How can we bring it back to the place where it brought mojo for you and deal with it? Now, because obviously when you got married, it was a different environment, a situation. Maybe you were just starting out as a manager, or it could be a very simple job. But today now you are running an NMC with 1,000 people working for you. So obviously time is no longer available to you to continue in that same place. But why not create a special time, whereas you pull yourself out for an hour and actually communicate with each individual in your family that can uplift you in that sense, because that's what is missing there. It's not that your work has changed, but your home life has changed. Now, how do we fix that part? Once that is fixed, I'm sure your work life will improve and you will see 10 times more growth as a leader, as a company, or whatever your final goals are, because not every leader wants to just improve the bottom line. Maybe some of them want to let go of their, like the title, and sit from the outside world, and like how Amazon Jeff Bezos did right now. He pulled himself out because he wants to concentrate on more important things of his life. So like that kind of thing also, because leaders really need sometimes an exit strategy, and they're not able to find that, because sometimes letting go of the new baby that you created, not the easiest thing to do. So I really give credit to Jeff Bezos and like even the owners of Google, that they pulled themselves out, because at the end of the day, we need to let go and see companies grow on their own merit that way. So letting go and allowing some great leader to come in and improve that flow for you.
Yeah. Well, and it brings back the concept of servant leadership. If you are really a great leader, I think you're always looking to grow your people, and who would be the right person to step in and take this job now. And, you know, how can I be serving people so that they're getting better and better and becoming more and more valuable and, you know, in a better position to one day step up and replace me as the leader, you know? Exactly. And, so that's, you know, it brings it back to one of the things you said at the beginning for me, which I think is a crucial ingredient of actual success. I wouldn't term it as success if it didn't include fulfillment, right? Like you said earlier, you know, if the work is making lots of money and it's super successful and you're hitting all the numbers and beating all the numbers and all that, but you're not fulfilled, then what is it for, you know? And I do think that one of the things that I've you know, gotten from you, from just being around you, is that that encouragement to sit back and look at the whole of life, and to encourage the leaders that I talk to sit back and look at the entirety of their life, and are they fulfilled, and is their home life supporting them? And, you know, are they spending enough time with their family and their loved ones? Are they making sure that they have a life that's bigger than their business? Because that's the foundation that business gets to rest on, right? So,
and exactly what happens here also. So for people, I have worked with leaders who don't have families. So I tell them, then let's see the larger picture. The world is your family. Now, how could you do good for people? So why not adopt some orphanages, or maybe adopt some elderly homes, or look beyond, like, how can you actually give back to society? And that's what some leaders are doing right now. And it helps them to create the same fulfillment as if it was like to take care of your family members, because you see the larger picture. That is actually going one step even higher than servant leadership, where you are actually becoming a spiritual leader, where you are trying to uplift the world for the betterment of mankind, which is perfect. And at the end of the day, what is a leader trying to leave behind? A legacy, something that proves that he actually did good before he ended and went on to the next part of his journey.
I think that's really great. And it makes me think about, because I've been we just got a visit from a couple of astronauts here at the house just a few days ago, and one of the things that all the astronauts talk about is how when you're up there in space, it's one world, you know, and it's the only thing for light years in any direction that's like it, you know, like there's only one, and you can't see the borders. You can't tell the differences that we've made, and it's all one world, and we're all, you know, it's our spaceship, and we're all crew on that spaceship. And I think that's, it's just one of the things that, and they all feel silly because they all say it, but they don't want to say it because somebody else already said it, who's an astronaut. But I'm like, well, listen, if that's what everybody thinks, then you just all say it. There's not that many of you. We can hear it more than once. But that idea of, you know, the family of humanity, right? Because I've known a lot of great leaders who didn't have families, and I think the most fulfilled and successful of them just said, you know, I don't have kids, but everyone's my kid, you know? That makes me cry, because I'm thinking of a couple of people who are just absolutely really that, you know? They are just out for humanity, and it's incredibly fulfilling, you know, for them, and wonderful to be around them. So I think that's great.
And that's a powerful thing. And it's good, you know, at the end of the day, there's only so much an individual needs, because, you know, a great leader is not a greedy leader. He's a giving leader. The more he gives, the more he gets. And sometimes it's not about increasing his wealth, but actually getting more love. See, happiness has an element of love involved too. Because the more love we get, the more uplift we feel, and the happier we will feel. Because at the end of the day, what is the gap between a successful man and a man who's successful at work? It's having loving, caring people around them who care. Mm. And, you know, one thing I heard also in the past, it's not my saying, what's more important is how many people show up at your funeral and actually cry for you departing from this planet Earth is more important than the money you had in your bank account when you died.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, he died a billionaire, but he only had four people showing up at his funeral who were only worried about how much money they got in the will. Is that important? Or how many people actually cried for this person dying? You know, because he changed, he impacted their lives.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really great point. So, you know, I know we're coming up on the end of our time this time. Is there anything that I maybe should have asked you about, or anything that I didn't bring up that you'd like to talk about before we go?
I just want to add, you know, a little thought here. You know, don't blame yourself for anything out there, because a lot of people have now, you know, because of COVID, they're blaming themselves for taking misactions. You know, fine, there were a lot of opportunities in the beginning, but the opportunities will keep coming to you. Don't worry about making more money from this. But learn from the past how could you implement these ideas whenever in the future that these kind of things come about? How can you be a better leader? How can you take care of your people better? You know, at the end of the day, that's the crucial element here. When you take care of people, they will take care of you and your business. You know, successful company is all about people taking care of customers. And that's what you need to do as a great leader. Take care of your people so they could take care of your customers.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you're saying something that I think that I've heard from Richard Branson. I've heard it from Herb Kelleher of Southwest Airlines. I've heard it from, I think the truly category breaking leaders is if your employees are happy, that's the most important thing, because happy employees will treat customers well, and customers that are happy will, you know, keep coming back, and that'll make the board happy and the shareholders happy. So really it does all start with just having happy employees. So I love that. And if you want to find Dr. Happy, you can go to his website, Suresh Devnani, SuresDevnani. And, you can see some of his excellent, YouTube videos. He's spoken at a number of TEDx events. I think you should go hear that. He spoke at care24.global recently, which was a big global event during pandemic all about happiness. And you were the perfect guy to have there. And I am really, really appreciate you taking the time to come talk with us. What time is it there in Cairo? It's almost 9 in the morning here in Salt Lake City.
It's 5 p.m. right now in Cairo, so it's a perfect time.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's pretty cool too, because I look out my window and I see the sunlight, and I know that you are practically on the other side of the planet, and you see that same sunlight right now, you know? And
we share the same sun. That's all.
I love it.
We share the same sun.
Yes, we do. We do. It's really great to get to share a little bit of time with you again. It's great to see you. I wish you all the best, and we'll have to have you come back and join us again sometime soon, Suresh.
Thank you, John.
You're super welcome. Thank you very much for joining us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time here on SpeakLikeALeader.show.
Thank you for joining the Speak Like a Leader podcast. Go be awesome.